Morning, everybody. We'll make a start already. Go slightly off topic of Hilchos Shabbos, move a little bit to Hilchos Shavuos, Hilchos Yom Tov. Just talk about the fact that this year has got its own complications, that we have Yom Tov on a Friday, and because Yom Tov is on a Friday, so we need to prepare food for Shabbos, and the way to do it is to make Erev Tashilin. So we've spoken about this before, but it's always good to go back and clear, revise, refresh what we know already and anything that we might not know. So use that as our topic for today. Today is the 3rd of Sivan. It is the first day of the Shloshim Yemei Hagbalah, the days that the Yidden were told to separate themselves and prepare themselves for Kabbalah Satayrah. Yesterday was the day that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them the tzibur, the commandment, to separate themselves and prepare for the Torah. So it's referred to as Yom HaMiyuchas. And in commemoration of that, we have from Rosh Chodesh Sivan Tov Shavuos. We don't say Tachanun in davening. Rosh Chodesh because it's Rosh Chodesh. It's next day because it's Yom HaMiyuchas. Then the next 3 days because it's Shlosh is Me'ad Bola. And then comes Yom Tov, then comes Yizrachag, and then comes discussion about after Yom Tov. There are many different minhagim, how one keeps the Avelus during the Sfira time as a result of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva Eger, and one thing is clear is that by Erev Shavuos every minute comes to an end. There are those who don't have haircuts from Pesach Tov Shavuos, up in the Arizal, other minhagim, and therefore whatever minhag one keeps, Erev Shavuos for sure, it's all over according to everybody. Then what we're learning in our regular shiur about getting ready for Shabbos applies to Yom Tov as well. Yom Tov also has a din of covered. Yom Tov has something more than Shabbos in that sense, is that Yom Tov is a mitzvah of simcha. And that's why Yom Tov is more makbid on Basar V'Yayin, and that's people who have new clothing and a treat for the children. Whereas on Shabbos we don't have that. Shabbos we only have the inyan of kavod and not simcha, so you've got to have a mechubadik meal. You have to have good food, but it doesn't have to be beef or veal or anything like that. It can be chicken. But in Yom Tov we try to go for basar, to go to actual meat. The other preparations that we make for Shabbos is in like cleaning the house and cutting nails and having haircuts and washing oneself, etc. All those things apply on Erev Yom Tov as well. As we know, there's a minhag to eat milchiks on Shavuos. There are various reasons given for the minhag of milchiks. The most common reason that is told is because told to children in Gan already, and therefore it becomes the one that everybody remembers, is that because when the Yidden had Yom Tov for Shavuos in the Midbar, they were suddenly given the mitzvah of Shechita. You couldn't eat meat without Shechita, and therefore they didn't have kosher meat available, they didn't have kalin, they all had to be kashered, so the only thing they could eat was milchiks. But it's one of multiple reasons. It's also, there's a pasuk, "Dvash v'chalav tachas l'shoinech," that the Torah is compared to honey and milk, so that we use milk. The reasons given are multiple. I saw a sheet last night. Someone wrote up on the subject, and I think he brought 8 or 10 different reasons why we eat milchiks. One thing for sure is minhag ganz klal yisrael to do it. Everybody does it. The question is how you do it, but everybody does. On that point of how you do it, so there's three common minhagim. Of course, if you have a different minhag, that's also good. But four common. The one brought in the Ramah is to split your meal into two. Half the meal should be milchiks and half should be fleishiks, which causes you to have two different challah, because the challah that you ate at the milchik meal is your fleishik meal, so you're bringing bread twice, and it's a zechet to the shnei alechem, or zechet to the two different korbanos, because we have chagiga and a korban yom tov. Like we have at the Seder plate, we put out the Zroya and the Beitza, so I'm sure we have a different zechet to the korbanos, we have two meals, two lochamim. So that's one way that's brought down is Hapi the Ramah. I, as a yeshiva bacher, was a guest at a family that did it that way. It has its own halachas of complications of how to eat milk and meat at the same meal without getting into problems of bas b'chalav. There are those who have milchiks for just one of the meals. It seemed like that there was an older custom to have it in the morning and out at night. And the more recent custom, recent has probably changed over the last 200 to 300 years, but that's recent relative to our history, is that people have a milk meal at night, exclusively milk without any flasics, and the flasics during the day. And that, I see, seems to have been a very common in Europe, Western Europe, and even in Lita. The Chazanish did it. He said that his father did it that way. The Stifler did it. The Chatzko Abramsky, I saw, Ron Kotler, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Reb Chatzko Sauna. So a lot of the Litvish Rosh Yeshivas did it, apparently. It says menu in Lakewood. Lakewood Yeshiva, based on Reb Aaron Kotler, is at Shavuos night to serve milchiks. And so that seems to be the most common they saw. And the fourth minhag that I've seen is based on the Darkei Tshuva. The Darkei Tshuva was the Munkacher Rebbe, and he writes that how can you be mevatel mitzvah Yom Tov, and what's the complication of having two meals at the Ramah? So he says simply to have a fleshik meal at night, a fleshik meal in the morning, and when you get in your milchiks, you have your milchiks for your kiddush, because on Shavuos, very often people don't come home from shul and sit down to their meal, because very often they daven vasik and they stayed up all night. Once they stayed up all night, then they need to, then they make a kiddush in the morning on some cake and something, and then they go to sleep and have the meal later. So he said, that kiddush, you make it milchiks, and that's why you makayim davka having milchiks on shul. So someone told me this morning that he believes that that's the common minhag amongst them. Everybody to himself, and as Machab Rosa said to me today, Shalom Bayis is in Indoraisa. Mashayin came, this is a question of minig, how to mekayim the inyan of cholot. Obviously, you've got to take what suits your household best as one of the prerequisites of deciding how you're going to do it. Candle lighting is necessary, just like on Shabbos, there's an inyan to have light at the meal and light in the rooms in your house where you're going to be, that you're going to be using. So we do the same thing on Yom Tov. We have lights in our house. We light candles. And the order of how you make the bracha before lighting candles, according to most sheets, changes. It's not like this tradition of the Magen Avraham, the Mishnah Berurah takes sides, and therefore we do it. The common minhag is, the way the Mishnah Berurah passes, is that you do it different to Shabbos. Let me explain. There is a question at which stage of Hadlakas Neiris are you Mekabel Shabbos? There's a question that comes before that are you Mekabel Shabbos on a day Hadlakas Neiris? When a person lights candles for Shabbos, can they do Melacha afterwards? So the way we paskin, at least Ashkenazim paskin that way, is that once a woman lights candles, she has been Mekabel Shabbos and may not do any more Melachas. But it's not binding on everybody else in her family, and also it's only for women. Men who light candles don't have that minhag, and therefore they can still do Melachas after they light candles. But since we hold that is the minhag, that the woman had been Mekabel, that they accept Shabbos through candle lighting, now we have to deal with it. How does it work? Does the Shabbos start when they make the bracha, or does the Shabbos start when they light the candles? And it seems to be that the Shabbos starts when you make the bracha. There is an opinion, and it's brought in more among the Sfarim by the Ben Ish Chai, that based on the Rav Sav Shalom, which is one of the Goyim, it's not a made up opinion, that the lighting of the candles is a form of Kabbalah. But essentially, the way we pass them is that the bracha is the Kabbalah. So if a woman makes a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Lehadlik Ner Shel Shabbos, now she's in Mekabel Shabbos. How can she go light the candles at Shabbos? Already? You can't light candles on Shabbos. Therefore, she should light and then make the bracha. The problem with that is that we have a rule, except for going to the mikveh and washing hands for bread, we always make the bracha what's called over lasiyosim, before you do it. First you make the bracha, then you do the mitzvah. You make the bracha on your lulav, and then you shake it to make the bracha on the shofar, and then you blow it. So you make a bracha on your candles, and then you light it. So you've got a problem. Now here I say, I can't make the bracha first because it's Mekabel Shabbos, and then I can't light them. But then I'm reversing the order. So what's the answer that's given is that you light the candles, cover the candles, or cover your eyes, don't get hung off from the candles, make the bracha, and then uncover your eyes, and that way you're making the bracha before you get hung off, before you get benefit from the candles, and then you retain the status of overlasiyasa. The same thing comes up, Lamaisa, in washing before bread, that we say that washing and tefillah go together. Just like when a person goes to mikveh, so the shayla comes up over there, in particular with a ger. A ger goes to mikveh in order to become Jewish. It's part of the process of gerus. And so the Chazal say, how can he make a bracha still a goy? He only becomes a yid once he's gone to the mikveh. So he first has to go to the mikveh, and then he can make the bracha. So it's a practicality. Based on that, we always say all mikvahs that need a tefillah, we say the bracha afters, because we don't want to mix them up. So now the question is, so once you deal with mikveh, better to deal with Netilas Yadayim that way. There are other reasons brought also, because you're Daimon and Nakias, but so when you wash, you first wash your hands and then you make a bracha. It's the wrong order. So in order to be some form of Oved Asiyasam, we try to get the bracha in before you dry your hands, at least the drying the hands, which is a part of the preparation for eating bread, because you shouldn't eat bread with wet hands. So then you wash your hands, and then you make the bracha, and then you dry your hands. Try to get the bracha before the drying. There's other cases in Brit Mila we discussed, and there also other cases of where we have questions of Oved Asiyasam, and then we have Eitzes Hasiyasam. So as we said in the Gabe Shabbos, is that the first you light the candles, then you make the, just as an aside, we'll get to it separately when we get to the Svarim, the Salachos, is, as I said, there is an opinion that holds that even the lighting of the candles and not the bracha is what's the Kabbal Shabbos. Therefore, after the Kippur, it can only be on the last candle, because once you light the first candle, how do you light the second one? So they hold them from the last candle. But then the question is, if you're holding a match, whatever it is that you're using to light your candles, how do you extinguish the match? You can't extinguish the match according to that opinion. And that's why some people have the chumrah to have a place to put the match where it will burn out by itself, and not to actively extinguish the match after lighting candles. But this is a chumrah. The lemaisa, we pass them that it's the bracha that's Kabbalah Shabbos, not the hadlaka. Yes, omer is that lot. So for those people, they have a place to put the match down without having to extinguish it. How does this all work on Yom Tov? Yom Tov, you're allowed to make a fire. Therefore, even if you're makabel Yom Tov with a bracha, you can still light the candles. So you strike the match, you make the bracha, and then you light the candles. That is what is accepted as the accepted practice on how to do candles. As I said, it's a machloikas. The machloikas is Magen Avraham and the Drisha, how to deal with it. Mishabura takes sides. But Lamaisa, you have a different minhag, you do according to your minhag. But if you don't have a minhag, this is what's considered as the regular way to do it, is to change the order. Yesh Omrim, people get confused. If you tell them on Yom Tov like this, the Shabbos like that, and then they'll never remember, stick to one way and always do the same. And Shabbos is important. So the way you do them Shabbos, the way you do them Yom Tov. So, Yesh Omrim Kacha, Yesh Omrim Kacha. That's just a. So I guess the best is to do according to the minute. There's also a discussion on every Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah to say Shechayanu on the day. The day has come. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for keeping us alive until this day has come. And we therefore make a Brikah Shechayanu on the day. The normal way to do that is when we say Kiddush, we Makadish the Yom, and at the Kiddush we say Shechayanu. There's a minute that women already say the Shechayanu at candle lighting, and that's why they makadish the Yom through saying Shechayanu. And those who have the minhag to do it, although there are a lot of pasuk who are against it and say that Shechayanu should not be recited at candle lighting, it should be waited for at Kiddush, but if you have that minhag, there are a lot of people who have that minhag and they say stay with it. If a woman has already said Shechayanu at candle lighting, so now comes the question, if she says, if now she's hearing Kiddush from her husband, and he's saying, or whoever it is, and she is saying, they are saying in the Kiddush Shechayanu, so she doesn't need the Shechayanu anymore, so she answers Amen to the Shechayanu, becomes a hefsek, it becomes a disturbance between the Baruch Pri HaGafen and the Birkas Kiddush to the drinking, and now the Amen is unnecessary because she doesn't need the bracha for herself. Usually the Amen is to help yourself be yoytzer to that bracha, you don't need it. Should she answer Amen, should she not? So, yes, I mean that she should be conscious of it and aware and try to remember not to answer Amen, but let everybody hold that if she did, it's not a problem. She can still drink the wine without a problem. There are different minhagim again also when to light the candles. On Friday night we have no shaila. You can't light candles after Shkir. You have to light them beforehand. Once if Shkir came, it's too late. You can't light them anymore and you're stuck. Yom Tov, it's not too late. You can light them afterwards. So some say you should light them at night because then Taka, that's when the mitzvah is. There's no mitzvah to light Yom Tov candles beforehand. And if you hold as a din in Tosefes, just like Shabbos is a mitzvah to add Mechola LaKodesh, you take Shabbos earlier. You push Shabbos off. From Moshe Shabbos, you make Shabbos a little bit later. So when you light candles, you Makabel Shabbos before Shvi, and that is Yumakai in the din of Tosefa Shabbos. Does Tosefa supply to Shuas? It's an Indian Mishne Atzma, it's a separate discussion. And that's why some people on Yom Tov would light at night. However, I would say, my personal opinion, I saw right differently, that if you can avoid lighting at night, you should, because there is such a thing, a sugya is called a Ner Shabbatola. I've spoken this before, I'll say it again, and that is that if a person lights a candle on Yom Tov for no reason, that is an Issa D'oraisa, you can only make a fire and do things if there's purpose to it, even though we pass it. Mitoich means that not only can you do this menacha for food-related necessity, but even for non-food-related. So you can make a fire, you can bring fire to put under your pots in order to cook. But does that mean you can also make a fire to create light, which is not food-related? But by we pass on mitoich. That's already, it's not a question of shaila and shulchan aruch. That's pass on already in the Gemara. The machlokes is either on shamag or we pass on akedah. That since it's chutra, l'tzorich arachon nefesh, chutra down shelo l'tzorich arachon nefesh, but it's got to be a tzorich yomtah. It's got to be something that's needed for yomtah. So you need the light now. You can make a fire in order to have light. If you don't need the light, then that becomes also it's also to light a candle if you don't need the light. A practical question is someone who has yahrzeit on Yom Tov, and he didn't light a Yahrzeit candle before Yom Tov, can he light it on Yom Tov? You don't need the light of a Yahrzeit candle. The question is, I need the Yahrzeit candle because it's good for the neshama. So that is an interesting question, because where's the makor for that? The lighting a candle on the Yahrzeit, it does not have much of a makoros, it's more of a modern thing. Modern as in a couple hundred years, but again, as I said, that's relative to our history, that's considered modern. And the Chasam Sofer and Broad Mishnah Berurah don't like the idea of lighting a Yahrzeit on Yom Tov. It's not justified. The reasons for lighting it did not justify it enough to make it a tzorech, and therefore, if a person feels that he doesn't want to have a candle burning, he can't go on his Yahrzeit without a candle, so then find a way to light it. Light it in a room that's dark, or light it in shul, because we hold that candles in a shul is considered as covered, even if you don't need them for light, you need them for the covered base of Knesset, so then it becomes a tzorech for the covered base of Knesset, and they light it in shul. A lot of shuls won't let you do it, they say it's a fire hazard, and they have to take that into account as well. Nafka Mina is for those who don't have a yahrzeit on shuls, but on Shavuos, there's a minhag to say Yiskor, and some people have the minhag to light a Yiskor candle, so that's even less of a makor, because a lot of people don't have that minhag. It's not clear where that minhag comes from, but a Yiskor candle that people light for Yiskor, l'chora even more so than a Yahrzeit candle, should not be lit on Yom Tov, and therefore if a person wants to light a candle for Yiskor, should remember to light it before Yom Tov. They might be, if you're in Chutzal, it's a 2-day Yom Tov, the Yiz goes on the second day, so get yourself a 48-hour candle, and not to light it on Yom Tov itself. Unless, as I said, you find a way that you get a tzorich out of it, you light it in a dark place. So, that's the din of a Ner Shabbatola, that you don't light a candle on Yom Tov, unless it has tzorich, and it has a justified tzorich. So now, while houses have very good quality electric lighting, how do we light candles on Yom Tov, if you already have light? What are you adding to your room by adding these candles? So you'll tell me it's minig, it's ambiance, it's something like that. The question is, that justify lighting a candle on Yom Tov? And the possum will all have a hard time justifying. We're going to see this is an issue regarding this coming Friday night. This coming Friday night, you need to light candles before Shkia, but before Shkia it's Yom Tov. How can I light my Shabbos candles on Yom Tov? You tell me, you did the Erev Tashin, but Erev Tashin allows you to do things that are on Yom Tov itself, mutter, but how can you light a candle on Yom Tov when your house is bright and you have electric light burning? Those candles, where's the heter to light them? So we'll see the different aces, whether to set your time switch to go off, so therefore you kind of need the candles at that time, or you light it in a room that's dark. Even if you don't know my, so they're going to say that at the end of the day, it's necessary because the minhag klal is so is to have candles at your table on Friday night, and it adds to the ambiance at the table, so you can light them and make a bracha on them. That is how we're going to pass the halacha l'maisa. But we see how bothered they are by such a thing. And therefore, if you can avoid it, you can. So Friday night, there's no way of avoiding it. You can't light them on Erev Yom Tov for Shabbos. That doesn't go. Kasbi l'chuvay Shabbos. But on Thursday, hare, you can. So So when it comes to this coming Yom Tov night, is this a better to light the candles before the Zman, before Shkia, like you would do on a regular Friday, and not to light them at night? If you didn't light them for whatever reason, you're running late and you didn't, then you can still light them at night. Okay, so those are Yom Tov related halachos. In the few minutes that we have, we'll try to talk Erev Tashilin. So Erev Tashilin is that on Shabbos you're not allowed to cook. On Friday it's Yom Tov, and on Yom Tov you can only cook for Yom Tov. You can't cook for Shabbos, because each day of Kedusha, day of Yom Tov, day of Shabbos, day whatever, we have what's called an Isur Hachana. Hachana is that you can't do something that is for, not for today, it's for tomorrow. For even if tomorrow is Shabbos, the kosher can, if tomorrow is not Shabbos, if tomorrow is the day of a lower status, you for sure can't do anything today for tomorrow. The Maisa, you ask me, Hare, tomorrow Shabbos, you're going up in levels. So there's a machlokes in the Gemara. Is that taka true that in Tzorka Shabbos Nasis B'Yom Tov, there's a machlokes in the Gemara? Some say it isn't, some say it isn't. Those who say that you may prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos, so why do we need an Eruv? It's because Chazal wants us to make sure that we prepare good food for Shabbos, and therefore, if they just allowed you to prepare, you might get involved in only making Yom Tov food and you forget about Shabbos food, and therefore you make an Eruv, and Eruv reminds you that you need to cook for Shabbos, and therefore they imposed an Isur. Lamaisa, it's mutter to cook, and they imposed an Isur, and then they gave you the Erev Tashilin in order to remove the Isur. The second opinion is that no, it's Asur. So if it's Asur, how does Erev Tashilin help? And they say it works on a loophole, but only you can only use the loophole if you have Erev Tashilin made. What's the loophole? Is that essentially on Yom Tov, you can cook whenever you like. I have eaten already, but you say, maybe someone's going to knock on my door, a poor man's going to knock on my door and say, I'm starving, do you have any food in the house? And you say, well, I have some raw meat. Would you mind waiting 3 hours and I'll serve it to you? So you're allowed to cook on the basis that maybe someone will come to your door and ask for something to eat. So that is so we shouldn't do that lechatchila, but once you've done Erev Tashilin, you can rely on that lechatchila. The difference between the two opinions comes out that if you're relying on the second opinion, then a taka of the food has to be edible on Yom Tov itself, in case an oreach came, and it has to be a practical thing. So not that we have to make sure that the poor people, not the Roman in the neighborhood, knocking a door, but it has to be practically a fit into that parameter that you're going to have food available for if a poor man knocks on your door. So if the food's only going to be ready with Shkia, then you cooked it on Yom Tov, what you cooked it for later. It had to be ready at least 5 or 10 minutes before Shkia. Therefore, we're going to say that and Lemaisa, how do we pass them? The Mogul Ram goes with the second opinion. The Mishavura says you can rely on the first opinion. And therefore, the Chachila, any cooking that you're going to do for Shabbos should be edible before Shabbos comes in. Because you have to rely on the fact that you could be available to feed it to a person who asked for food for now. Erev Tashinin should be put aside on Erev Yom Tov, not on Yom Tov, even though it's for the Shabbos. And if it's 2 days Yom Tov and then Shabbos, the same type of thing, it has to be done on Erev Yom. The mitzvah is on everybody, but when you have a household, the head of the household can do it for everybody who's in the house. What about you have guests in the house that want to rely on you? Then it depends what type of guests they are. If the type of the guests that come commonly and consist of themselves as part of the household, then it's fine. If not, then the balabas does it for them, but he should be mezakeh them in the food. In other words, the food that you put aside for Erev Tashilin, he should let them make a kiddin in it, or make a kiddin on behalf of them with someone else. And then they don't have to actually hold it. You can give it to a third party who will take it for them, but you make a kiddin. Someone who will not be making preparations for Shabbos does not need to make an Erev Tashilin. Therefore, if all your food is pre-cooked and there's nothing you're doing for Shabbos, you don't need to make Erev Tashilin. The question is, what happens if all your food is pre-cooked and you're going to be warming it up? So the question is, what type of warming up are you doing? Are you doing a warming up that is an Isur Derabanan or Isur Doraisa? If you're taking a double gush, something dry, and you're just warming it up, there's no bishul over there. It's maximum. You're putting it onto the platter, which is a get a Derabanan. Do you need Erev Tashilin for that? So a lot of the pastors say that if all you're doing is you're warming up food, it could be that you don't need to make a broch on your Erev Tashilin. If you're warming up liquids, then a lot of pastors say that you do make a bracha, because a soup or a chalent or something like that, and you can, because then there is bishul in liquids. Therefore, you are going to be cooking. The question comes out, someone who's not cooking, you're eating out, you're eating with someone else, whatever the case may be, and you're not cooking. but you need to light candles. Do you make Erev Tefillin? And there the consensus is you should make Erev Tefillin, but do not make a bracha on it. You set the food aside, you say the nusach, but you don't make a bracha. Someone who needs to make a bracha should not put it without a bracha, shouldn't give up on the bracha. If you made it without making the bracha, it is kayim. If a person made Erev Tefillin thinking that he's going to be making, he's going to be cooking in the end, he doesn't cook for whatever reason, went to hospital, or also the neighbor delivered some fresh food and said, don't worry, I got extra to take mine and don't cook. Whatever the case may be, it's not a bracha levatala because you do it because you think you're going to be cooking. That's enough of a reason to make Erev Tefillin. We say that the Rav of the city should always have in mind that he should make Erev Tefillin to include everybody who didn't make Erev Tefillin, but yet we say that a person should not rely on the Rav only if a person forgot, but forgot not because of negligence, but there was some sort of onus that might have happened, or they don't know how to do it themselves. So if a person forgot to make Erev Tefillin before you cook, or you have to go speak to the Rav what to do, because a lot of possible hold that you can only rely on the Rav once, and it depends if it was Pesher or not, there a shaila should be made. If a person came into Yom Tov and said, whoops, I forgot to make Erev Tefillin, go ask a shaila once. Although the head of the household makes the Erev Tefillin and is moitzi everybody, whether they're present or not, the meaning is that they stand by, that they stand next to him and they listen and they hear what he has to say. He should say the nusach. Well, after making the bracha, he should hold the food in his hand and he should say the nusach of, I'm now facing an Eruv, and through this Eruv I can now cook and bake and do all the things I need to do for Yom Tov. He should say it in the language that he understands. So if he doesn't understand what's said, then he should say it in English, or any other he does understand. The Eruv should, Me'ikadin, it should have a cooked food, preferably a main course type of food. That means a protein that you would, what the Gemara calls Varim HaMalasin Zapas, that you usually eat with bread and not just a side dish. So therefore, the common thing is to use a piece of meat, fish, or an egg. And as well as taking bread. The bread is less important, but the mice of the meaning is to always take bread. There are those who are makbi to take although you only need to take the size of the kabeza, but there are those who are makbi to take a lechem shalim, a whole challah, a whole bread. Some people take a matzah. The downside of taking a matzah is that lechatchila, the food that you're making for your Eruv, should be something that's cooked for Shabbos. A matzah was made in a factory with nothing in mind, and you're just taking something in the cupboard and setting aside. It works, it's good, but it's better to take something that was made for Shabbos. So the challahs that you bake for Shabbos, you take one of those. Or the food that you're cooking for Shabbos, or that you're going to be cooking for Shabbos, so you take a piece of that food that you're going to be cooking for Shabbos, and that creates your Eruv. That is the best way to do it, but if don't have it, you take something else. As I said, take a half of whatever that's in the fridge. You take a piece of matzah that's in a box, the seder. That is all right. And then the mitzvah is that you actually eat it on Shabbos. This is, and you have your meal. And the challah as part of the lechem mishnah. Some people use this the second challah Friday night. The second challah Shabbos morning, meaning they don't cut it. But the shudah, so you use three times over on Friday night. The food has to be edible. And it has, that means that if it goes bad, it doesn't exist. And it also has to be kosher. Although interesting, I saw brought down that it doesn't have to be of your standard of chumras if it's kosher, but something you're machmir on a certain hechsher, it can, it's bidi evid, it's all right. So preferably it should be, will eat you can. What's important is that the food that you've set aside for Erev Tefillin has to be in existence when you cook for Shabbos. So when you do all the preparations for Shabbos, the food has to be in existence, and therefore when you put your bread and protein aside as an Eruv, you have to put it in a place, A, that no one will eat it, and B, that it doesn't go bad. If it goes bad, then it's considered as if it's rotten. And in fact, I think I saw in the name of the Aruch HaShulchan, the reason why the minute came to use eggs, is not considered something so kosher, but it's best fish or meat, is because when they prepared eggs and you had a two-day Yom Tov, and as if they prepared meat and you had a two-day Yom Tov, they didn't have fridges. So you cooked it on Wednesday, and then it was Thursday, Friday. By the time Friday afternoon came, that meat was rotten, had to be chucked, and therefore the Eruv was disqualified, and therefore they couldn't merit a shilling. They used eggs which kept better for a longer time. Today we have fridges, so therefore it's better to take something like that and put it in the fridge, but put it in a container that no one's going to help themselves on Yom Tov, and then you're going to be stuck without, because once it's eaten, you can't do anything anymore. Although the It can be eaten before candlelight. But if you've cooked everything already and all that's left is to light candles for Shabbos and it was eaten, then you can still light candles. But preferably you should leave it till Shabbos and not eat it on Yom Tov at all. Okay. What about non-food related preparations for the next day? For example, can you set the table? Can you wash the dishes? Well, that's food related. But can you make the beds? An interesting shadow that comes up is, can the Gabbai roll the Sefer Torah from one day to the next? Can he do it on Yom Tov in preparation for Shabbos? There's a very big machlokes about this, whether Erev Tashilin helps or doesn't help, or it's not even necessary. Kiva Eger, for example, holds you don't need Erev Tashilin. These type of achanas you can always do from Shabbos to Yom Tov. So you want to fold your talis after Shachris on the first day, so that it's nicely folded for you to wear on Shabbos. Contributive Eger, whether you did or didn't do Erev Tashilin, you can fold your talis on the first day if you're allowed to fold the talis. It's a separate story, but if the question is Hachana, then it can be done. Lamaisa, I saw that the consensus is to try is to, you can do Hachanas if you've made an Eruv. If you haven't made an Eruv, then as I said, you can rely on Kiva Eger. It's not a single opinion, even though we call it the opinion of Kiva Eger, but preferably you should have an Eruv before you do preparations. Therefore, you can wash dishes and set the table, make preparations for Friday night already on Friday afternoon. Minutes, I'll just bring in an interesting question. We said that the Eruv has to be available and possible to be eaten. If the Eruv has been eaten or went bad or got lost or was stolen or whatever it is, then you don't, then it's as if it didn't exist and you don't have Eruv Tashilin. What happens if the Eruv is out of town? It's an interesting shayla. A person went away for Yom Tov, him and his whole family. So Thursday morning, he made an Eruv Tashilin, put it in the fridge, and then they packed the car and off they went to the hotel. And they left the Eretz Tashilin at home. A lot of opinions hold that that's no good because it's not acceptable. It's not clear because there is a discussion that Chumrim is not a reason to consider it not acceptable, but if that happens to you, make a shayla. A more common shayla that should be discussed, that can be discussed in advance, is what happens if, say, the head of the household is going to the Rebbe for Yom Tov. So, and on Thursday morning, he makes Eretz Tashilin, puts it in the fridge, and then he says goodbye to the family, and he says, see you on Motzei Yom Tov, I'm going to spend Yom Tov with my Rebbe, and he leaves it at home. So there is more reason to be Mako, because his Eruv has been used by the family. He didn't just leave it discarded at home and the whole family went somewhere else. If the family is using it, there's more reason to be Mako. Again, I suggest if someone's in that situation, should go make a shayla, whether he would get separate Eruv when he at home and not with. And with that, we wish everybody a good Yom Tov, a good week, special Kabbalah Satorah, to share more Tuesday.
Thank you.